So, Mike, I got to tell you the story about this time that I got run over by a pickup truck. So, me and six other friends, we're all out at one of my friends, Joe. He had this large area of land. I think it was like 40 acres, just east of Columbus in Ohio. It was actually just east of Newark. So, it was really far out there, kind of in the middle of nowhere. And we'd all decided to go out there, and we were going to have a bonfire that night. And for whatever reason, most of the guys decided they're going to go four-wheeling. So we all pile in the truck. And there's about eight of us total. So there's two in the front, and then the rest of us got in the bed. And we start just bouncing off across the terrain. And, I mean, we really weren't taking it easy. I mean, he was not trying to throw us out of the bed of the truck, but it almost seemed like it at times. And I don't know, for whatever reason, I've always been that person that I think in sixth grade, I got some dumb award. I thought it was a good thing for one-upmanship, but I think my teacher was trying to make fun of me. I didn't realize it, but I'm always trying to, you know, do something better. I'm always challenged or pushed by others. I like to be the center of attention, but then I hate it and I want to disappear. Anyway, I decide I'm going to go ahead and jump up on the sides of the truck. So like the walls of the bed. So I'm standing up on the side, either side wall. And yes, I'm flexible. And I'm holding on to the back of the actual truck. So like the cab of the truck, right? And the window's open. And I'm talking to Jeremiah, who's driving. And there's five other dudes in the bed of the truck, and we hit this one bump, and I end up getting, I mean, the whole truck, everyone's trying to hold on to not get thrown out. I do get thrown out. And I think they told me my head went under the whole truck, but I don't really see how that's exactly possible. What I do know is that the back, I would say, I guess it was the rear driver's side tire, ran over my right ankle and my left knee, just clean, right at the joint, which is somewhat complex joints. Yeah, I mean, it was a good thing that in Ohio, it rains a lot. The ground was really soft, and I ended up imprinted deeply into the ground. But immediately, Jeremiah comes to a stop and is freaked out, naturally, and he jumps out, James jumps out of the cab on the other side, and all the other guys jump out of the back of the truck. So they come over, run, and are just like, hey, no, don't move. And I was not moving. In fact, I kind of was pretty calm. And I said, don't worry, guys, I'm not moving. I can't feel my legs. I'm not going anywhere. And it had hit me like, you just did the dumbest thing of your life. Snow, like, you've done a lot of dumb things. There's been so many, but this was the dumbest. You lost your legs. Like, you did something stupid and you lost the ability to move. And then slowly I began to feel some blood enter back into my legs and I could feel them again. And we ended up later that day walking back, well, not walking back, but getting back into the truck and driving very slowly back to where the rest of everyone was. And them trying to, my girlfriend at the time, trying to convince me to go to the hospital, which in retrospect, I probably should have done a little sooner. But I kept saying no. And we went home that night. We dropped everyone off. And so on the way back, we stopped at my mom's house just to see her because it was kind of on the way back. And my mom is my mom, so she made us immediately go to the hospital. And and I'll never forget the doctor's look on his eyes when he came out after all the CAT scans and certainly x-rays. He went to check for, you know, internal bleeding and soft tissue damage, as well as obviously bone damage and complex joint damage, that there seemed to be none. And he was like, son, do you have people that pray for you? Because this shouldn't, you got it run over by a truck with an extra 1,000 pounds in the back, if I'm to believe what you're saying. And you have zero, there's really nothing wrong with you. There's a little internal bleeding, but don't do this again.
So I have a question.
I'm not sure I'm ready for it, but go ahead.
So how long have you been a show off?
It's a love-hate relationship with it. Really, since I was born. I've always been, but it's a strange thing because as soon as I get the attention of everyone, then it's like, no, don't see me.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I don't actually want to be in the center of attention, but I want to participate and everyone looks like they're having so much fun. And I know how to get people's attention, but only for a short time. And then I'm like, I'm a fake. I have no idea. It was a joke. Please don't look at me.
Don't look at me. Yeah. So, I mean, when you look up what a show off is, it's somebody deliberately making a pretentious display of one's abilities or accomplishments, right? And another part of that is that show offs are focusing not on the task, but on the performance or the perception of the task, right? So, I mean, I can kind of see a little bit of that in that story, right? You guys were off-roading, having fun, but you wanted to take it to another level.
Always. And part of that is just I really love that adrenaline. So part of it is very, very natural for me.
Right.
I love pushing any physical boundary. And generally something I put my mind to physically, I'm good at. I think largely because I'm not afraid to get hurt. And so I will continue to do it until I excel at it. Mm. I recently learned to skateboard to try to connect more with my daughter. And I'm not terrible at it.
Yeah.
I started when I was 42. But it always kind of starts in that it's like I feel like I'm not being seen and like people don't realize that I'm even there. And it's, I think it goes from being a wallflower that you're like, hi, I'm alive.
Yeah.
Something to contribute and going from that extreme to then a very brilliant display of performance and then the realization that maybe I didn't want the attention after all.
Yeah. You're kind of like, I can see two sides of this, right? So one, human beings are very social by nature, right?
Right.
So we want that inclusion, right? Because, I mean, you look at the past, having that family surrounding, you know, you just further your chances for survival. There's a ton of different things there. And when you don't have that, when you're kind of rejected or removed from that equation, then things start to, like, symptoms start to come up like depression, you know, and these are things that people want to obviously avoid. So I can see that, like, you're drawn to that social dynamic, but at the same time, you might have some sort of like introversion that's keeping you from, or this, you know, threshold of stimulation that you can't really, you know, everybody has that threshold. I've always found that fascinating. I think we talked about this before, right? So understanding different people's thresholds, it really explains what people refer to as introversion or extroversion.
Right,
but
right.
In reality, it's really just how much can you handle, right? So I've always liked that.
Yeah.
I think Quiet was the book that we talked.
Oh, yeah. Susan Cain, right? Quiet. I think we talked about that once. The Power of Introverts in a World That Just Can't Shut Up. Some title like that.
No, it's an amazing book. And one of the things that stuck out to me was how they asked, or they did a study on babies in a crib with a mobile kind of up top spinning around. And they hypothesized that maybe we can predict if a baby's going to become introverted or extroverted based on how they interact with this mobile. Yeah, yeah.
So I haven't heard this.
Their theory was the people that are the babies that are really excited about the mobile are going to grow up to be a little bit more extroverted, right? Mm. And the babies that were a little bit more softer and like not paying attention to it, a little like shying away from it a little bit, would become introverted, right? You would naturally think that, right? But it was the opposite, which was
really
surprising. So what they determined, and this kind of plays...
So you're saying the ones that were more involved were likely to be more introverted?
Exactly. You wouldn't expect that, but what they kind of concluded was it has to do with that threshold. So what happens is these babies who have a smaller threshold for stimuli, they don't know how to respond to that.
Okay.
So they kind of freak out over that overstimulation. So, and the babies who have a higher threshold for stimulation, you know, when it was it's just a mobile, like that's fine, you know, like it's no big deal, right? So it's...
Haven't you gotten me a bigger mobile yet? Like,
yeah, like...
Or some, yeah. I don't know, fire, you know, something. Let's step it up a notch.
Bring me some fireworks, Mom.
Really, this is kind of dull. I mean, it's a good attempt. Like, I really appreciate it. Namaste for the attempt, but let's step it up a notch.
Totally. Yeah. So, I mean, I thought that was fascinating because anybody that you would ask going into that would expect the opposite, but sure enough. And wow. I think it does have a lot to do with how people are. I mean, I was just talking to one of my buddies about this the other day. It's interesting to witness in my five-year-old son his threshold, right? So he'll go into a party with his cousins and friends and family there, and he wants to be the center of attention. He's out there dancing and laughing and having fun. And then after a while, it's like, where's Liam? Where did he go? You know, and he's like in the room, you know, just like by himself.
Totally. Like found a book.
Found a book, iPad, whatever. Right. He's like, wow. he just needed to remove himself. And yeah. I think there's something to that because.
So he gives little bursts.
Yeah. He really? Has. It's, you know, once he reaches that threshold, he removes himself. And when you really think about it, it feels like him understanding that threshold at that age is really impressive because I think some adults don't even see that.
Totally.
You know?
Totally.
And so when they're in a situation where it's overstimulation, a lot of times they'll tend to get moody mm-hmm. or, you know, they seem like they don't want to be there, but they don't know. Hey, just take a break, right? If they were to just remove themselves, and a lot of ways I think that that's kind of socially driven, right? If you removed yourself, you're looked at as rude.
Right.
In some cases.
Right. Withdrawn, yeah. Antisocial.
It's like, where did he go? That was rude, you know?
Yeah.
So anyways, that was a little tangent.
I've heard people say that about other people in a party, and I've thought, that's an interesting perspective.
Right.
But perhaps there's a lot going on that they don't know about, let alone maybe that's just not the way. Yeah. But yeah, it is looked at, generally speaking, as kind of that antisocial behavior.
Right. Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. So the fact that maybe you were probably one of those babies that, you know, it's just a mobile. Where's the fireworks, mama?
But that's, I guess what I'm saying is I've always been trying to show off and I don't know why necessarily. And then withdrawing, like kind of like you're saying.
Right.
Perhaps I'm sure somewhat different thresholds, but right. Does that really explain why it's always been like that?
When we start to dive into it, it's, you know, the need for attention, right, mm-hmm. is a big play. And also the fear of rejection, right? So like it all comes back to that. I want to be part of this society. Right. I want to be part of this group. I need this social aspect in my life or else, you know, I'm afraid of loneliness.
Yeah. Right? There's competition out there and I'm not the only one that can be a friend. I mean, I grew up in a bigger family, right? Mm-hmm. I was the oldest of four, when I was five.
Yeah.
So from,
an early age
in 5 years, my mom had four. Oh yeah. I had so much competition. Wow. Like, and every time I thought I had mastered, I know how to keep this one under control and get mom and dad's attention. And then there's another one. Like, wait, then I'd master that one. There's another one. Wait.
Yeah. So there's definitely so part of a need for attention there. Yeah. No, 100%. And I mean, I can see how a lot of that played into that, obviously, growing up. Mm-hmm. But as you got older, I mean, that probably blossomed into a whole different set of needs and desires. And I mean, I'm sure you kept having to step it up. You're almost competing with yourself at the end of the day, where it's like, you know what? I got to one up myself.
It takes getting to a lot of honesty with yourself before you realize that. Like that, what you just said is not only true, but it requires a degree of self-realization that most don't come to. It's exciting to see that you understand that. Mm. It's a difficult process.
Totally. I mean, that's why it's at the top of the Maslow's hierarchy, right? Is the self-actualization. So if you really look at the core of understanding yourself and bettering yourself, the very top is self-actualization, which is like you've achieved it. And that's really difficult.
I think, therefore I am.
There we go. So there's also this little checklist that I saw. It says how to tell if you're a show-off.
Oh, boy.
There was like
do I not want to see it?
These few questions.
Go ahead and ask.
So I'm just wondering how many checks. So, and this is really good to understand where you sit on the show-off spectrum, because I think that there, it is a pretty wide spectrum. You know, there's good.
This is the SOS, the show-off spectrum.
The show-off spectrum. Exactly. So do you divert every conversation to yourself?
Oh, isn't that just narcissistic?
We're getting there.
Yeah, that's, I mean, everything, yeah, I mean, your premise there's definitely, leads to NPD.
There's definitely a gray area, I think. I mean, there's definitely a thin line, I think, between showing off.
That's hard, though, because I would never, I certainly hope that's not true, but I just said I like six times.
Well, it was a direct question. Well, let me go through this. So you divert every conversation to yourself. You do things you don't like to do just because they're cool.
Interesting.
You constantly talk about your latest purchases.
That would definitely not be true. And I don't talk about my latest purchase. Okay.
You keep talking
sometimes if I really
until someone
like it.
Stops you. Stop talking, Mark. Or you feel humiliated when other people show off. So this is some interesting.
So were those just rattling off the questions, or were any of them questions for me?
No. Those are just of how one can see in the eyes of others if they're considered a show off or not. So is this something to tuck away in the...
Mark, do you think I'm a narcissist?
No, we'll get into that.
You're getting to me being a narcissist because I'm going to really cry if you think I am.
No, and this is what I love about this is what I love about this show is just because you have some traits of a show off does not mean you're a narcissist. And what separates a narcissist from somebody who's not a narcissist, for example, and that's empathy. Right? And I think you are one of the most empathic people I know. So don't worry. You might be a little bit of a show off, but I don't think you're a narcissist. What do you think about that?
I think that throughout my life, I've had so many negative connotations associated with that type of behavior that I never meant to be bad. Ooh. In fact, I think in who I am, I'm generally more concerned about being good or bad. And that's...
And that balance.
There's been such like a... Yeah, I don't know.
I think a balance is what's important here. And that kind of resonates with the whole season so far. And it's really about finding that middle ground, I think.
Yeah, I think it was... You mentioned that threshold earlier. And I think perhaps I didn't always know when was the appropriate threshold. And I would push past it. And then people are like, oh, yeah.
Pull away.
Because there's that... I think with anyone that... is in that limelight of whatever, I don't care if it's your parents' attention or the world's attention and anything on that spectrum, there comes that point where you cross over and everyone's like,
yeah,
too far. No, totally not okay.
Spectrum is the key word here, I think, right? So you have extremes on both sides. And, you know, we're talking about trying to find that middle ground. But when you look at the opposite side, there are a lot of benefits, I think, to being a show-off is what people
do tell.
Say. I think a lot of it stems from really helping to drive confidence and self-esteem, right? The more you put yourself out there, the more you talk about, you know, positive impacts in your life. I mean, it makes you feel better, I think, in some cases. That's why we're seeing this, you know, boom in social media with Instagram and Snapchat, where people are constantly showcasing, right? We'll get into that. But I think another part to be said is, it can cost you if you don't show off nowadays. Like it's if I take it to that next extreme, not only is it good for you in some cases, but it will almost cost you if you don't, right?
You don't have a brand. You don't have a public presence.
Where we live in a society now where everybody has a personal brand.
Right.
Right. And I've seen the quote the other day, we live in America and attention is currency.
Attention is so... temporal.
It's
do you think the nation has ADD?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, we can't help it. Well, the way technology is driving instant gratification, we can't really help it, I think, in some cases.
Well, sure we can. It's called Adderall, Ritalin.
Or digital
Vyvanse.
Detox. Getting rid of it. Did I mention ordering that light phone?
Can you believe that they would put methamphetamines or amphetamines in some... they're metabolized in very similar ways in whatever dosages in children to cause hyperfocus, which pacifies, because of the ADD, because of the attention.
Yeah. And that's, we could talk about that.
that's a different topic for a different day.
All the studies behind it. It's just, you know, digital has transformed so much of us so quickly that so many things have not caught up yet, and it's so frustrating to see.
So my daughter the other day, I will, and the only reason I use her as examples is because They're immediate, they're present, and because I love her so much. She is such an amazing human. And and this is the thing, you're saying how digital transformed so our culture so quickly. We used to say the technology would transform faster than like Congress could legislate. We're so far beyond that.
Oh, far beyond that. Technology has evolved faster than humans could evolve.
So even social norms. So for instance, my daughter's walking around with one AirPod in, and I'm like, can you take that out? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, don't you think it's a little rude? And she's like, no, why? Everyone walks around at school with one AirPod in. So I can listen to music, but I can hear you as well.
Right.
And I'm like, but you're not giving me your undivided attention. She's like, it's not on. I said, but I don't know that.
Right. And is there such thing as undivided attention anymore?
And she says, and I said, is it always off when you're talking to me? And she said, I don't know. I mean, sometimes maybe not. I might be listening to, I don't know, Billie Eilish or someone else. And I'm like, so I don't even have your attention. She's like, you do. And I'm, and this, we have deep discussions about it because I'm like, well, here's the thing, that might be a new social norm in the last 2 years. Cause AirPods have only been, it's not okay. Like people wearing Bluetooth have been doing that for a long time. And a lot of people looked at them totally arrogant. And then I get it because I'm on business calls all day long. So I'm probably looked at like that in the airport. And well, maybe that's in a socially, culturally acceptable, but other public places.
It took
places,
a while though, but that became acceptable.
That became acceptable. But now this is my daughter in junior high in everyday classes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the new generations are redefining.
She's like, Dad, I can hide it with my hair. And I'm like, girl, I had long hair for a while too. I can hide it too. It doesn't mean it's okay. But attention.
Totally. And the new generations are redefining attention.
I don't even know. I mean, I just have to think about when I am actually 80 or 90. Mm-hmm. I mean, I already feel like, get off my lawn, kids.
With like your darn headphones.
Your damn headphones and your rippity snappity. Whatchamacallit?
But that's exactly what it is. Like,
what is it going to be like when I am 80?
That's exactly what it is. The new currency is attention. In America. And I see it all the time in marketing, right? And you can see it too, is we're constantly trying to find how do we get that attention in this world of such noise, because everybody is shooting for the attention. So because of the fact that we live in that, you can't help but not self-promote. And you're almost doing yourself a disservice if you don't.
And then those of us who have had negative feedback when we have self-promoted in some ways or others, that perhaps have been healthy and perhaps have not, perhaps just tried to keep up with what the current societal and monetarily, you know, reasonable expectations were to stay gainfully employed. Then you're kind of left in this paradox am I doing something that's narcissistic, or maybe to use a lesser word, let's use a much lesser word. Let's just say even self-promoting or I don't know, what's a better word for that?
Self-absorbed?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it self-absorbed, or is it the bare minimum to maintain any sort of a followership and therefore be able to be employed? Because and I don't mean that you have to have a social presence to have any sort of corporate identity. But then again, don't you?
I mean, this is why marketing is becoming such a big focus everywhere. If you look at one of the biggest purchases by the company, Accenture, they just purchased a huge marketing firm. I forget for how much, but it was... And that's why you're starting to see all of these people starting to focus so much more on brand and brand development. And that, you know, we're seeing throughout this series a lot of parallels between corporate America and personal development. Right. And I think that this is another big one where, you know, corporate is focusing on how do we brand ourselves, because it's really how do we get the attention and how do we keep that attention?
Right.
And I mean, it's one of the reasons why social media is so addicting, right? Because it's just you're peering into other people's lives.
Their best lives.
But their best lives, right? And this is what's constantly... So we have this paradox, or we have this vicious cycle of having to promote ourselves because we live in an attention-driven society, but we're also trying to handle which, you know, how far are we going down that narcissistic path, right? And I mean, you're seeing it every day. I mean, it's causing all sorts of social pressures, you know, the FOMO, the anxieties and depressions, really just the social misery, I think, that people go through.
That's exactly what the other side of that looks like, though, is depression. In fact, one of my former colleagues that I just recently reconnected with him on Twitter, and his pinned tweet is about, hey guys, social media and or depression in technology-driven enterprises is real. Hmm. If you ever need anything, DM me. Like, I'm here.
That's awesome.
But he's also way more widely known than I ever was. And that's a big invitation. That's right. Putting yourself out there in a very and you know, I don't think he's trying to be everyone's counselor or therapist in any way. But even the possible influx of real people that are like, yeah, what you're saying is real. And I see, because as soon as I saw that pinned tweet, I'm like, oh yeah, he's been there.
Right.
I know what you're talking about, because this social pressure is one thing, but it's not the real you. And he's just being the real him. And it's amazing.
You know what? There's something to that. You're starting to see more and more celebrities offer services like that. You know, like, hey, call me. I think Ryan Leslie, he started a company where you can text him directly. He has like a whole platform for it. And other people are signing up for the platform, other celebrities, because it's a direct, a direct phone number to a celebrity that they can promote.
That has to be measured, though. Because any one human can only take in so many connections before they become emotionally overloaded.
But you'd be surprised, because I've also seen a story, and I wish I could remember the celebrity, but they said, they put it out there, hey, if you guys need help, call me. And not one.
I did when Anthony Bourdain died. I cried my eyes out that night. Mm-hmm. I went and I said the same thing, like basically like, the shit's real. Call me. I'm here. Mm. And people liked it and supported it. I mean, it got one of the biggest and highest showback numbers in terms of analytics, but I didn't care about that, because that day was marked by my profound loss of one of our, I feel like, deepest friends and members of a global society. And yet no one called. And I wonder if my other friend, who I just noticed did this a few months back, I wonder if, in fact, I've been meaning to reach out to him. I just saw it again this morning. It's what triggered my memory. I was going to reach out to him this weekend to see if anyone took him up on it.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, and that's what I think. Most situations, in most situations, people don't. You know what I mean?
Why? Do you think they just feel isolated? Why? Why do you not?
Well, I think that they also come at it. I mean, I get that all the time too, right? Where, you know, I'll be working on some really interesting projects, and I'll have some friends that are, you know, maybe aspiring marketing professionals or engineers and, you know, web developers, graphic designers, whatever the case. I have a lot of examples of this where they reach out like, oh, this is amazing. Like, I want to do this one day. And I invite all of them. Come watch me. Come spend the day with me. I'll show you. And I hardly ever get taken up on that request. And I actually ask people why, you know, and a lot of it comes down to, well, I don't want to bother you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But that's my biggest thing.
Right.
So I would never take you up on that.
Yeah.
And it's because I don't want to, that's exactly what you just said. And I don't want to bother people.
Right.
Why?
Right.
Well, why? I don't know why.
That's a topic for another conversation.
That is a topic for another conversation.
So it's interesting that you mentioned that post, that Anthony Bourdain post, received some of the highest amount of likes or feedback. What amazes me, and this is one of the reasons why I'm not on social media, is because it amazes me how much people are driven by the likes. I think there was a stat, let me see, 80% of millennials know someone who has deleted a post simply because it didn't get enough likes.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, the fact that people are driven by the likes.
It's almost like they're embarrassed by the lack of likes.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally.
And you could go back in history and see that one of them only got 3. Out of all of them that got like 300, one got 3.
And this
embarrassed.
And this goes back to the definition.
And I don't know that that's their motivation. So that's not fair.
And this goes back to the definition of what showing off is, right? You're doing it not because, not just to do it, you're doing it for the perception. Mm. And, you know, I'm just surprised that people are deleting it just because it, and I could totally see that. And it's like, oh, this isn't, you know, this isn't getting enough attention. Let's just get rid of it. Because for one, it's not doing what I want, which is getting the attention, because right. we live in this noisy world now. We're trying to cut through the noise and get that attention. But not only did it not do that, but now it's making me look bad
right.
because it's not a good enough post. Maybe it wasn't showing off enough.
It's a negative brand hit.
Yeah, and people are constantly trying to step that up. Mm. And that's what was crazy to me, because you're getting to this point where everything you're posting is a status symbol, mm-hmm. right? And you're seeing this all the time. Possessions, you know, possessions are everything. People want to show it off. So yeah,
but
faking
yet
it
when
to make
you,
it.
What, yet what you hear the age old adage that it's lonely at the top, meaning like when you get everything, you realize ain't nobody else here. Like it, if I didn't make true friends along the way, this is pretty boring. Like
there was a quote by a famous sociologist and economist, Thorstein Veblen, I believe. And he points out wealth or power must be put in evidence, for esteem is awarded only on evidence. And I think that quote is brought up on some of these discussions around social media, because that's exactly what people are shooting for.
Say it again.
Wealth or power must be put in evidence, for esteem is awarded only on evidence. Mm. So yeah, you can talk your talk, but unless you show it, and that's why that's why platforms like Instagram and Snapchat have taken off, and well, specifically Instagram, because going back to that stat, I think it was something like 64% of people believed. This was a survey of 10,000 millennials. 64% believed that Instagram is the most narcissistic social media platform. It had more votes than Facebook, Twitter, and Snapchat combined.
That makes sense.
And I mean, it's just one of those platforms that became, I'm going to one up you, you know? And I think it comes back to that quote, because the people, they want
to feel self-valid. I mean, just the word that I heard you use was esteem. If you want self-esteem,
yeah, exactly.
That generally starts with self-value. So I don't value myself and I need to get that externally.
Yeah. Yeah. They're thriving for that esteem. And the only way to do it in this case is to showcase the possessions.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one of the reasons why, I mean, these are extreme. Like I said, there's a scale, right? And you can have self-promotion work for you. You can have self-promotion work against you. And
it's why if you're in business, I've always found it's good to be on a team that can, let's say there is something to promote and perhaps one. So, I mean, if you take any sort of my son and I were watching Anchorman the other day. So like, let's say from news anchor all the way on up to TV personality or actor, actress, or even just subject matter expert, nuclear physicist.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, look at Stephen Hawking, look at any person that has something valuable to say. If you're promoting yourself, it could be what's the right word? A conflict of interest, the dichotomy, the paradox of needing to do that in order to take that voice that needs to be heard and therefore needs to be productized, monetized in order to get really helpful work out to the world.
Mm, right.
And I don't know that self-promotion is wrong. I'm not saying that. I'm simply saying it because you got to start somewhere. Some people are just a crew of one, right?
Right.
So you have to self-promote. Yeah. You got to hustle until you can get someone else to promote for you.
Right.
I don't know. There's some balance there. I'm not exactly sure what it is. I'm still trying to figure it out.
No, 100%. I agree. But we are getting to the point where society is becoming a little bit more accepting, I think, of self-promotion.
Sure.
Especially when done right.
Well, our population is booming, and there's no way that all of us can be the profitable company. So
they're almost expecting it.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? You know, you look at the Gary V's of the world, and, you know, there are videos every day online, and it's self-promotion to an extreme, but not to the extreme, I think.
My son, when he talks to me about content that he's watching, he'll say, "Dad, this guy posts like 70 times a day." That's... that's the thing he leads with.
Wow.
Is the quantity.
Right. Yeah. It's
he knows that that's what drives that dopamine in people. Does.
I mean, if you really look back so far, that really has been the recurring theme, I think, for a lot of the season. It's finding that balance. Mm-hmm. You know, on one end, there's failure, and understanding and learning from it is key and vital. But understanding and learning from other failures is just as important, I think. Mm-hmm. Being able to take what's around you and hopefully combine all this to something that would drive success, right? Look at showing off. It has its good side. It has its bad side.
It's the SOS. It's the show off spectrum.
There's a show off spectrum.
Do you want me to show off SOS in Morse code? Beep, 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 beep.
Thank you for that, Mark. Oh, that's great. No, there is a spectrum. I mean, if you really think about it, there's a thin line between being idolized and being a jerk. Right? Being impressive and being annoying.
Yeah.
Pushing yourself forward and failing backwards. The key is to acknowledge this line, I think. Understand when you're getting close to the wrong side and using those experiences and other people's failures to help pull you back to the right side.
That's awesome.